Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And wow, we're back on the saddle, like officially. Like we're doing the show as if we actually still do podcasts.
Exactly.
We have extreme consistency and frequency. I'm proud of us.
Back at it.
One day at a time, Brian. One day at a time. Because retail waits for nobody. We've got a lot of interesting and really topical news, actually, that's like kind of like it's always in this lull heading into summer where, you know, it's just like a lot of really interesting conversation before we actually start talking about holidays. Real quick, as we record this, Google I/O is happening.
True.
Literally right now. The only announcement that's happened right now is that they're updating emojis, so nobody cares. And then also at this exact moment, Shopify Unite is happening. So it's also, we're in the thick of, you know, user conference season as well. So lots of interesting things to talk about for probably from, you know, a digital commerce perspective, in the next episode or two. But that's happening right now. So expect, you know, something to be talked about, you know, a bunch of these. I think WWDC is probably coming up in the next month or so anyway, too. Lots of stuff happening.
Interesting.
And what are you doing, Brian? What are you up to these days?
Well, I think by the time this airs, I'll be back from vacation. So
you've been on vacation for 4 weeks now. Yeah.
That's right.
No, that's great. And also, as always, your thoughts and opinions do not reflect those of your employer.
Correct.
Do you affirm this statement to be true?
I do. Looks like Google's getting some serious body data stuff right now.
Is it really? Well, okay.
Cardiovascular.
This is going to be like, oh, is it really? No way. Seriously? For real? That's a thing?
I don't know.
I've got to check it out now. We're going to do like intermittent, like, oh my gosh, Google I/O, probably during this whole show. Because that's pretty much, oh, they actually dropped the word Google Glass. I didn't expect that. Things you didn't think would happen in 2018. All right. I can't wait to hear what actually happens. Anyway. Okay. So let's actually talk about some of the things we were talking about. Speaking of you working for Amazon and they get to share you with us from time to time, sharing economy.
Sharing economy.
I participate in the sharing economy. I don't know about you.
Of course.
The great podcast produced over at Retail Dive with, I've just started listening to the show very recently. Google Play just did this really interesting update, or Google did an update where you can play podcasts in the web browser, like as a search result. That's neither here nor there. But that's actually when I searched for Retail Dive the other day, that's how I found this. Yeah, we're not going to say the G word at all during this whole show. Retail Dive is actually, that's how I found this particular story, this actual podcast. But there's a 30-minute interview as part of the 30-minute series on the Retail Dive podcast with Jennifer Hyman, who is the CEO and co-founder of Rent the Runway. And I was really impressed at the sort of like very topical discussion of how she sees like where they fit into the sharing economy. And there's a really great pull quote, actually. You haven't listened to this, right?
No, I haven't listened to this yet.
Okay. All right. So this was a great quote. It's in the blog that accompanies this the podcast as well. But anyway, it says, the retail economy in 2018 runs the majority of our lives. If you think about how we interact now with transportation, travel, entertainment, music, and now clothing, we're so used to having an option to rent or an option to subscribe as a customer that we make the choice that's best for us. And she, you know, goes on to some other stuff too, but it was really interesting because I started thinking very deeply about that, and it's really true. You know, everything from like bikes in downtown now to,
bikes,
city
everywhere.
Centers. Right. There's bike sharing is pretty, well, bike sharing's kind of been a thing for a long time, but like we could get into that, but, everything from bikes to now cars to, I mean, there's Zipcar, there's, you know, lots of services for car sharing. There's ride sharing, which is, you know, all the services like Uber and Lyft. But that exists on every level for pretty much everything, many of the things we interact with on a daily basis. So I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think even home sharing is starting to become a thing in San Francisco, right? I think that's starting to even, we're moving even in that direction. You'd think that would be sort of the last bastion of things that you don't share, or sharing clothes or sharing cars or sharing, you know, just about everything that's not a consumable, right?
Right, for sure. Yeah. You know what, actually, it came up recently. I saw it over on the, where was it? You ever follow the Points Guy?
Yeah,
it's a great blog. If you're really into travel, at all. So I do a lot of travel, specifically with JetBlue. And I got a notification, like there was this great blog over on the Points Guy that JetBlue and JetSuiteX now have a code share partnership, which is really interesting to me because JetSuite is one of those sort of like NetJets kind of type of companies where it's a fleet of private jets that are, you know, used for, you know, short haul or, you know, for semi-private flying experiences. What's really interesting is that JetBlue is now doing code share with them, meaning you can book some JetSuiteX flights through JetBlue and fly any of, you know, one of their, you know, Embraer 135s. And they basically, so they're regional jets. It's basically like business class type service, and that whole experience is now available to a whole separate set of people. And it's very similar to there was another service that did this recently too, on a subscription basis, where you could basically buy, you know, JetBlue is basically just buying extra capacity, and selling it through to their customers, like their top tier customers, on this otherwise luxury service that's available only to a select, you know, few people who use it on a daily basis. And this is part of the sharing economy, and that would be unsold inventory that otherwise would go unused is now open to a larger group of people. And I think that that's fascinating.
Totally. Yeah, no, planes make a ton of sense, private jets.
Sure.
And, you know, I think there are actually a couple services out there that actually, do this on a broader basis even. I forget the name. It was like Elite something or other. But yeah, now the sharing economy, you know, it's interesting. It has invaded every part of our lives. Like I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this, but yeah, it's going to continue to, I think, advance, and the secondary market as well. I mean, yeah. I kind of consider that part of the sharing market.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah. We talked about that a lot in the last episode. You should definitely check that out. But yeah, you're right. Especially in luxury goods or aspirational luxury, things that, you know, people really, are very desirable, and they're from a lot of brands that aren't, you know, they're not just Gucci and Prada.
No.
In fact, there's a brand that I wasn't aware of until recently when I started becoming a baby hype beast. a brand called Supreme. Are you familiar with them?
I've heard the name.
So you'll definitely recognize the logo if you were to see it. It's interesting because they do a lot of collabs with, you know, a lot of sneaker brands, but they also do a lot of like outdoor lifestyle and like sort of active lifestyle things like Red Bull or Fox, motocross, that sort of thing. But you know, it's just interesting that there's these brands that have, you know, sort of manufactured scarcity, and very expensive for like canvas and leather or like very expensive, you know, products. But what they've done is they, you know, they have a very, very large following in a secondary market, and they, you know, these products take on a sort of a life of their own and amplify the brand in secondary market more than the brand could do on its own in direct to consumer.
Yeah. I wonder if there will be more companies that build out their own secondary markets, brands that build out their own secondary market.
Now that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So how would you see that actually, like if that were done well?
Yeah. I mean, think about this, like people trade in their cars, right? At dealerships. Why couldn't you trade in your clothes and then that company could resell? Now, I think they don't want to undermine their own. Probably that's going to be the biggest fear, is that they're undermining their own brand and their own like top end sales. But people are using the secondary market anyway. So why not make that, you know, your own channel?
What's really interesting. So cars is this really fascinating example there. I love that you used that example because they do things like rev body styles and specs from year to year. Definitely, you know, as style progresses and the market changes, you notice change and shift of, you know, a particular brand.
It's actually slower than, say, fashion.
I mean, for sure. Oh, it's way slower.
But it is significant. So I think there is a good comparison there.
That comparison is fantastic because you could make the argument that the consumer that would buy a used car is not your new car consumer. Like you are selling to a fundamentally different person.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that the same would hold true to anybody buying on the secondary market.
At least at a certain type for certain types of brands. I think that's not true. Like someone that's going to wear like, I don't know, Old Navy, like there's not really a secondary market for Old Navy to go after, right?
Show title.
Right?
There's not really a secondary market for the Old Navy, like USA, you know, flag tee, the $6 t-shirt from Old Navy.
Right, exactly.
But although I do miss my like orange Old Navy performance fleece from like 1996. I kind of miss that a little bit. But I hear what you're saying. Right. Yeah. Certain brand. It would have to be a certain level of durability and, you know.
Hey, don't knock the durability of Old Navy.
There's the show title.
Where do we even go from there? Well, no,
okay. About cars, which actually I think hits on sharing economy as well. Well, it's not really sharing so much as I find it really interesting how even car brands are they've always pushed the envelope in technology, but they're, you know, and Volvo in particular, I have a Volvo. I'm a fan of Volvo at the moment. But Volvo, you know, they stay in the news. They're, you know, all of Uber's self-driving fleet are Volvos. They've made a commitment to, I think, by 2022 for their entire fleet to be all electric. They're pushing the technology barrier. What I'm really fascinated with right now is that they just announced a subscription model, and it's so you know, I was hesitant to actually call it a subscription. I wanted to call it a glorified lease. But what's really impressive about this is, so their subscription model, they're calling it Care by Volvo, I think it is. You have an app. If you are already a Volvo owner, you probably already use their app. And the app controls lots of things like remote start and, you know, travel log and stuff like that. There's an app that comes, you know, with your car. You can subscribe to Care by Volvo in the app. Right there, right now, they're only offering it on one of their cars, which is their base model crossover SUV, the XC40. Here's what makes this mind-blowing, okay? So it's like a lease in that there's a fixed term. So there's a 12-month or 24-month term, and there's a mileage cap with overage. So in that way, it is like a lease. However, it comes... First of all, there's no down payment, and there's no price negotiation, fixed price, no matter what. You either qualify or you don't, and the price is the price. So that's part of the subscription. There's already coverage for excess wear and tear, so you don't kind of get dinged for all the things you would get, like you didn't change your tires and you had a 3-year lease or something like that. However, this is what blows my mind. It comes with insurance. So where you would normally buy an insurance policy for yourself, you know, or you have an insurance policy that you would take out for your car, for you and other drivers in your household, this comes with like a Liberty Mutual insurance policy.
It's a car in a box.
It's a car. It's everything you need to drive. It's literally everything. It's a car in a box, and you can subscribe from a freaking app.
What's interesting about this is a pricing strategy, right?
Like it is a pricing strategy. Absolutely. For sure.
Which I
the last
love.
Thing, by the way,
like this is
you
so
can
innovative.
Flip the car out. You can flip the car out every 12 months. That's the last thing.
That's amazing.
So if you want, you can, you know, there's two levels. You can go with the premium, you know, which is like, and it starts at $600 a month, goes up to $700 a month. If you go to the premium model, which is like their R design model, it's like, you know, basically like the more premium version of the car, then you can swap that car out every 12 months. So it's kind of like the new iPhone lease, only with a car. And I really feel like this is fascinating
to me. At a much higher price point.
At a much higher price point. That's probably true. But, you know, if you think about it, like someone out there who already does a lease of some kind probably is doing the math in their head and it's like, maybe like this might actually get me out ahead with insurance.
Yeah, or at least, like let alone get out ahead. Like, you don't have to spend so much time thinking about and dealing with your car, which is
so much.
Like, even when you buy a new car, there's still a lot that you have to do. You know, you have to get it insured. You have to, you know, you have to take care of all kinds of things to go. I mean, I guess it's not that different, but it's awesome because if you are at a certain income level and you don't want to think about your car, you just want to drive. It's kind of a no brainer.
And listen, I realize that not everybody's in like, this is obviously like we're talking about luxury goods and luxury products.
Luxury
experiences.
Luxury goods as an initial point
as a kickoff to
what if we did this with a Camry, right? What if we did this with a Corolla?
And I believe that others will follow suit. This is the first of many. And I'm sure Volvo wasn't even really the first. I'm sure somebody's going to say, well, actually, there's, you know, somebody did this thing.
You just said it like Jim Gaffigan right there.
But I do think what's interesting is Volvo is going to be, like, they found the right car for it because I think this is a car that would fare very well from a price point perspective in, you know, selling it after the lease or selling it after you turn it in. Like, you have to sell, they've got to turn that car around a second time once it comes in off of the subscription, right? So there's got to be a market for people to buy this particular car that's a year old and been used lightly. So I think they've thought through all of that. And I think that's an interesting point. I would love to see brands, I'm trying to think off the top of my head who this would work for. I mean, there's a lot of the Apples of the world likely are already, they sell refurbs already. So they're already in this market.
Well, what about, let's go back to luxury goods again. Like, why couldn't you do this with clothes? Like, you know, you stain it, you tear it, you do whatever with it. Like, there's a kind of a guaranteed policy. Obviously it's going to have limits, but like basically you're good to go on clothes. You just go and you don't ever worry about sizing or like changes or problems, or, you know, you just wear what you want to wear and you wear nice clothes all the time.
Like, yeah, somebody invent that service. Cause I would be your customer. I would absolutely do that for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. Exactly. clothing
in a box. We'll call it Stitch Fix. Wait, no. that is not the model at all. Okay. Speaking of model, I'm just plowing through the whole, through our doc.
Well, hold on. Let's go back to.
You always kill my great segues. You kill them. I do. They die.
Usually I come up with awesome ideas while you're
talking.
That's good. That's good. Because I'm not really paying attention to you. I'm thinking about things.
You're not my only co-host to say that. So.
So back to the secondary market for 1 second. I was just thinking about fashion again and like how, you know, it is an interesting situation because with fashion, things change so quickly that, you know, having a model like this actually might not work. Especially with like fast fashion. I guess I was thinking about sort of that mid-market range. Would this actually work or not? But then I was thinking about it. And honestly, we've had a big trend towards durable, long-term, like millennials like things that last. And so I think that back even in the late 2000s, I don't think this model would have worked. But now that millennials have money and they want to have things that like there's certain fashions that just stay in style no matter what. And certain clothes that just keep on keeping on, that actually it could work. It could work because we've changed like our fundamental like cultural understanding of what clothing is. And I think people can also dress in a more diverse way than we used to be able to dress. Like we're not quite as trendy as we used to be. There are trends, but there are more of them and you can sort of be who you want to be. And so I think, you know, there's more opportunity for clothes to last now than they used to. Just simply because of that diversity of thought and diversity of style.
But I believe that that's just true of luxury goods in general, is that there's a reason why they're luxury goods, is they're usually made to a higher level of quality and durability because of the types of fabrics or the leathers that are used, the stitching that's used. It's not that they're purposely choosing to do things in an expensive way. They do things the way that are the most durable.
The market wants them. Yeah, 100%.
The market wants it, and by default. And so, you know, by virtue of it being an expensive product, it is a luxury good that is, you know, like is highly desirable. And they do become status symbols, right? So
yeah. Now here's another thing that could kill this idea. So. Sizing. We've talked about body data a ton on this podcast. And now Bonobos just announced that they've got an even deeper range of sizes.
Oh yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Reporting 172 men of different, you know, sizes and different ways of wanting fits and things like that. And
diversity of both, not just racial diversity, but in body shapes, right?
Like yeah, exactly. Was, and so, right. What may allow fashion companies to sort of keep the secondary market at bay is getting more specific with sizing, and then we as a culture sort of shifting our view of what makes clothes good. They have to fit perfectly, right? So if the secondary market will take a bit of a hit here because it's going to be harder to find the exact right size for your body unless something is custom made or you find the exact right size, right? So then all of a sudden the secondary market starts to shift because you're going to need to keep the same clothes that you bought to begin with if you want them to fit you the way that they should.
Yeah, what's crazy about this is it's funny. It's just a natural market pressure, I think. That instead of somebody having to think through all these things, like just the desire for products that are generally one size fits all, are the ones that have created natural aftermarkets, right? So again, with the exception of sneakers, which we've talked about ad nauseum now in the last three episodes, with the exception of that, watches and handbags, and now scarves and a few other select items, those are the kinds of things that have, you know, have a lot of resale potential. And they are generally one size fits all items. So it's an astute observation. Can we actually pivot over to this other story? Cause I'm actually, it's like right there. We're right on that.
Do your amazing segue.
No, so you can't set up a segue. I already set up. That's not fair. No, I was going to say that Nike does, when we're talking about, diversity of body size, and ethnicity as well, Nike does this phenomenally well, which is sad because Nike just had, as we speak, a new article that just hit was, four more execs depart Nike. Nike's also appointed two women into executive leadership role amid a bunch of shakeup there in the company. However, if you shop Nike at all, you'll see that they use like actual, real, true plus size models for their plus size clothing. They actually are using people with like fairly normal bodies, not just like ripped athletes for every one of their product shots. A lot of, especially the women's products, show actually natural looking people, normal looking people wearing some of the Nike brand, which I find just really refreshing. And obviously Nike's done this for a long time, but Nike has a very healthy diversity in the ethnic diversity of its models. And on model and off model shots as well. Sort of like the lifestyle is not just around sports, but we're now seeing it in running as well. We're seeing it in training, cross training, sort of the sort of CrossFit, their trail shoes, like all these things are actually showing a lot of people from a lot of diverse ethnicities in those, in those lifestyle shots too, which I find really, really awesome. So just to call them out there, I know that they're under fire in a lot of different ways right now, but they're the one that comes to mind when we were talking about bonobos there. Someone who's getting that right. At least that might be the one thing they're getting right now, but so credit where credit's due for that.
Yeah, I think, Nike's got a pretty great history of at least movement towards this. So I think that's a really good call out.
There's a lot of pundits out there who probably could, say a lot smarter things about it. But as a consumer, as a fan of the brand, I have a particular, affinity towards the Nike brand for a lot of different reasons. So I find that sort of interesting and refreshing, engaging with it a lot. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, EMARSYS.com/futurecommerce. Actually, it's funny because I was just there and there was, it's a funny story that I put out. So you and I went to the Nike Lab, I think last year when we were part of for IRCE.
Was that? Yeah, I think you went by yourself. I think I had an event.
That no, you came with me. We talked about it. I'm pretty sure. I'm 100% sure someone was with me. Someone. I thought it was you. Okay. Anyway, I went for the second time this year. I went.
You were in Chicago, yeah. No, actually, why don't you talk about why you were in Chicago?
Yeah, I was there for B2B Online. I was actually, I was getting there, Mr. Segway Stealer. you know what it is? I just need to learn to be a little. I need to be quicker. I need to tell the stories quicker. That's my.
No, I don't let you. I don't let you. I stop That's you good. When you start just to make a segue too quickly.
And, freaking and love this. Off. This is awesome. Okay, so our. Yeah, I was at B2B Online. I hosted a roundtable about voice commerce and how it affects B2B and how it can be used for B2B. Everything from business yeah. dashboards and analytics to you know to actual like purchasing and procurement, order processing, supply chain. All those things can be controlled with voice interfaces. And we also talked quite a bit about with a lot of really interesting brands who attended the. The roundtable. We talked a lot about where sort of in the adoption curve consumer technology, or what they would say is consumer technology, becomes business technology. So the iPhone, you know, the iPhone is a good example of how the iPhone displaced BlackBerry and Motorola and a bunch of other business devices. That you know, were traditional business deployed business. Infrastructure, handsets, that sort of thing. And now they, you know, you'll see an iPhone as a mobile point of sale in, you know, in the Nike store, right? You like right. you see iPhones pretty much everywhere in business applications for a lot of reasons. And I surmise that we'll see Alexa and Echo and all those sorts of things in that same adoption curve for business. And so I was sort of preaching the good news of Alexa in that regard. which I found like really, really interesting, as everybody has sort of the same take on it in that they're like, oh, that'll never happen. I'm like, oh, we've heard all this before. because your customers are also the people who work in your office and they're going to say, this is so much easier on my Echo at home. And you're going to hear a lot of that as well. And plus, you know,
yes.
we'd covered earlier. This year, Amazon for Business is a big, big, big thing. Or Alexa for Business is a big thing. And that's, you know, it can't be overlooked. The sort of efficiency that you can get with, you know, two-way video, audio conferences, you know, all of those things that will naturally come to bear with having those sorts of products in your business. Anyway, all that to say, it was a great session and we all learned a lot. I got to hear how other companies are using voice today. A lot of them think of voice as IVR, which is like, you know, telephone systems.
Right.
Right. And they've been doing this for decades now with telephone systems, and they're going to have to unlearn a lot of what they've learned through telephone systems.
Correct.
And that's going to be a particular challenge to have to face. But very, very cool. And thanks to WB Research for helping us have that panel. That was really great. But that's why I was there. I thought that was great. Also, while I was there, I don't know if you have anything to say about that because you are at the Big A. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I will say about that is I think you're barking up the right tree in that, you know, I use Chime, which is a service that you can sign up for as any business. It's a standalone product, I believe, for businesses, Amazon Chime, it's like their meeting software. And you know, Echo's even being, you know, integrated into that too. So it's really exciting to see, how, you know, Alexa's being integrated into every aspect of our lives. And I think, business is definitely one of those things.
Yeah. And we all stand to benefit, right? Like that's yeah. the.
And I really liked your point about, I think it's really astute to point about, how, you know, business people used to, you know, use their iPhones at work because it was more effective, right? Than using their business machines. Yeah. And they really came to expect that level of being able to operate. And right. So as people get used to using Alexa at home, then they're going to expect the same things out of their office equipment as well.
Yeah. And I find it interesting that we just came out of that not even 10 years ago. Like, it's been 10 years of the iPhone or so, maybe 11 at this point. And we went through this already in the business adoption curve. And I think we're going to go through it again with voice in a big way. We've also gone through it recently in sort of the deployed IT infrastructure in like cloud and on-premise, you know, server hosting. We've gone through this a number of times, and we're just going to have to keep it like this is a truism of the way that technology adoption goes. And it's just going to,
yes,
not like we're going to learn a lesson. This is how we learn the lesson. Like,
it's a little, we've learned the lesson before though.
I mean, that being said, like, things do have to prove themselves out, especially at business at scale in the billions.
Yeah, sure. So,
anyway, while I was there, the conference was at the Marriott on Magnificent Mile. And right across the street is a Levi's like flagship store. So I popped in there with the expressed intent specifically to see if they had a Levi's Google connected jacket, which we talked about not so long ago.
Yeah.
And so I actually got to try it on. And
got a fit. Was it a jean jacket?
It is a jean jacket. Oh yeah,
God, your favorite.
Yeah. By the way, what's funny is now Google and Facebook both believe that I have an insatiable desire for jean jackets. Like, one jean jacket is not enough. You must have 30 jean jackets.
That's gonna get replaced pretty quickly with shoes.
Right. Oh gosh, it's already happened. Yeah, in a big way. I get push notifications now from Google about sneakers, which is just terrifying. I really don't need any more shoes.
Stadium Goods.
Yeah, Villa. I get Stadium. Yeah, Stadium Goods. I get Villa. I get now I get apps too, like Kixify, StockX. What else do I get? I don't know. Lots.
Are you going to collect shoes and start reselling them and all that too?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm already keeping boxes. I've never thought about keeping shoe boxes.
You're not allowed to wear them. You know that, right?
Yeah, no, I know. But you can. You can sell them worn. You just sell them for less. That's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. If you want to make money though.
Yeah, no, I got you. Yeah, I'm not looking. I want to experience the product and then make room for more product to experience them.
you have to fund your habit though by becoming a reseller.
Yeah, that's I'm not. I said I'm a baby hype beast. I'm not all the way up to grown adult hype beast yet. Let's talk about Google Jacquard, the Jacquard by Google. Levi's Commuter X, which was the jacket that's the connected jacket. I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago.
We did. Yeah, it was several episodes ago now. But
under the wearables category. So so a couple gestures for this jacket. There's actually not a whole lot to it. I wish there was more to say. One, I think it's kind of ugly. All right, so that's just my take on it. I do like sort of the function.
You love jean jackets, though.
I do. I have an insatiable desire for jean jackets. I wish it were more form-fitting, but I totally understand that, like, a $350 jean jacket that has technology in it and Bluetooth compatibility, like Bluetooth connectivity, and it comes in multiple sizes and only one colorway, it's a hard thing to produce. So you kind of have to make it more mass market, and having a fitted style probably wouldn't, you know, appeal to everybody. So it's a bit boxy for my taste. That's just sort of my take. I do like the color, but the fabric is a little stiffer and more of the sort of trucker, you know, trucker canvas, heavy denier, heavy denim sort of a feel to it, which may wear in after a little while. But anyway, I don't know. Yeah, that's sort of my take on it. So the technology itself, they had a model on display. The ones you can try on, they didn't have like any charge to them or anything. So I couldn't actually like pair it with my phone and try it. But they had a demo model on hand. There's really only a couple gestures. So you can brush the cuff, of your sleeve. I think it's like I mean, I did the left cuff because I'm right-handed. I don't know if it works on both or not. But you can, like, you can basically, anything you can do, this is sort of the disappointment of it. And I really hope that it's more of a direction for the future than it is sort of like, you know, where we're going to be for a little while. Anything you can do with like the headphone controls that you might have on a standard set of headphones. So like volume up or down, pause or play or double tap or something like that, you can pretty much do with the touch of the sleeve on this jacket. So you can sort of swipe and you can tap, and that's just about it. And it uses Bluetooth. It's kind of a disappointment.
People that chew on their sleeves, not going to work for them.
Yeah, if you chew on your sleeve of your jacket, you're going to be in a in for a rude evening. This jacket's not for you. It's Bluetooth, low energy. So it's BLE. Basically, they say the battery life is like up to 10 days or something crazy. I figure if you really swipe a lot and tap a lot, you could probably get that down quite a bit. I can't see how, like, but what it does not have, which is sort of what I was hoping it would have, is it doesn't have like an integrated Bluetooth like capability where like there's no headphone jack for me to plug into the jacket. There's no,
people have kind of done that before.
I know, but I'm just saying like it's really just for hands-free control of your phone while you're riding a bike. And it's more of a gimmick than anything, but I do like, I like that it was exciting enough that I wanted to go see it. And if it weren't a Google collaboration, I probably wouldn't have cared. The technology feels absolutely invisible in the jacket, though, for what it's worth.
That's cool. Yeah, right. I think that's the problem with a lot of the smart speaker or smart wearables that we've seen before. It's hasn't been super integrated. Like, it hasn't been integrated very well.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think, and there are still, I mean, there's a lot coming out right now. There's a ton of wearables coming out right now. And I think a lot of it's connected back to body data more than anything else. Although just on May 1st, I think the Amazfit. Mm. Did you see this? The Amazfit just launched their budget smart shoes, which is like, they're like $32.
No.
Yeah, look this up real quick because this looks super cool. Amazfit Antelope. It looks like they can do some tracking, some basic tracking.
Like Under Armour connected shoes type thing? Or?
Yeah, exactly. But at that price point, like $32.
Oh, yeah, that's a killer. That's a ridiculous. Insane.
Like, I think I might have to get some of those.
That's interesting. One thing I want to...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, it's not about the product. I kind of want to get away from like... You can go to a lot of podcasts and talk to a lot of people that are a lot smarter than us about consumer technology in sure. fashion, right? For me, it's more about how Levi's as a retailer is utilizing technology to appeal to a certain type of consumer and how that's going to change how Levi's does business. In fact, there's a couple things that I noticed in the store, which is they have to have a separate display for this. Right? This is like its own little thing. This is not the kind of product that you just, shove on a rack. This is a flagship, like new direction for them. And they have to make a special like display for it to show it off. That means we have to educate the consumer. There's like, a touchscreen kiosk that you have to like, it tells you the story of the Jacquard, jacket and how Google,
right.
There's a consumer education component here. And I think from a retail perspective, that's really interesting.
Well, it's important to do now because I think a lot of consumers still aren't even close to ready for smart clothes, really. Yeah.
So for sure.
The educational aspect is huge. Like rolling this stuff out in flagship stores and like sort of building momentum and hype. Like I doubt they're going to see an ROI on the jacket. But it's part of getting, getting movement towards having, sensors all over your body,
right.
sensors and other technology. So yeah, I totally agree
with you. You cannot sell this product the same way that you sell the 501 gene. You just can't, right? It's a different,
no, of course
not. A different type of product. And I think that's pretty bold, right? And it's from a brand that I wouldn't have expected it to come from. And when we see brands like Levi's doing stuff like this, whether it lasts or sticks or is successful or not is I think irrelevant. It's that this is the kind of market condition right now. This is the economic climate where we're going to see things like this, because you cannot do this at any other time than when you have historical low unemployment in the United States, right? We're at almost full employment in the United States, and we have a booming economy. So you take risks.
Well, you can if the usefulness is there.
Right. Like, the utility has to be there.
Yeah, utility has to be there, and it's definitely not. This is a luxury item.
A $350 jean jacket is not, oh God, I'm setting myself up to buy one now, I'm sure. But that's not a thing anyone needs, right? Like,
yeah. Especially like gestures on your sleeve.
Right.
Like that's just not really compelling, other than, again, it's getting people ready. I mean, this is like the Palm Pilot of clothes.
But I do think in a world where people are buying $700 Yeezys, right? Like I don't know. It is actually simplistic enough that this technology and the Bluetooth, you know, capability might endure. Like this could be a product that you keep for 7, 8, 10 years, like you would any other denim jacket. It might still work in 7, 8, 10 years time. I have Bluetooth devices that work from 5, 8 years ago. Like it might be just simple enough that it could actually,
and then it might not. Like you'd never know.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Actually, right. Right.
Yeah, because like we might not be using Bluetooth in 5 years, possibly.
I
think we will.
I don't know.
Think we will. I tend to agree that we will, but I'm just saying technology has a way of surprising us. And so,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for things to change. Most people don't wear a jean jacket for 5 years. Like, usually that jacket is done within a couple of years.
Yeah, not so, with that attitude, they don't. You have to really go in for the long haul in the jean jacket.
Well, I know you did.
Yeah. I love my jean jacket. I just wore it this week.
I know you do.
It's
like it's one of your like personal branding things.
Unfortunately. Yeah. That is a sad thing. Yeah.
It's because you've talked about it so much on so many podcasts.
You know, I need to do a keynote about that. I'm going to have to craft a keynote about the jacket and the customer journey.
About the jacket, yeah, right. Yeah. And then I tack on shoes to that too. That's awesome.
It's unexpectedly really interesting conversation from us today. Anything else we want to cover?
All that to say that there's no such thing as the retail apocalypse.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. I think you're 100% right. even though mall, Charming Charlie, and like 4 Gap properties all closed up.
And Destination Maternity is going down
Right.
There's a lot of stuff still happening.
A lot
of things still happening in terms of store closings. There's just, I think there was, we reached a point of like, yeah, where we're seeing new retail, and like now pure play retailers are moving into, or pure play brands and retailers are moving in store and kind of taking over that space. So it's like
who, Brian? Give me an example.
Like Indochino has been expanding their in store footprint, their brick and mortar footprint quite a bit in the past 2.5 years, 3 years here. They launched their first one in 2015, and they've been expanding a bunch of them. In fact, there's one just not far from my office downtown in Seattle. So, you know, it's interesting where we see poorly run or irrelevant brands starting to fade away. New, more savvy brands are coming in and taking their place and putting themselves into positions that I think, you know, that those other brands weren't putting themselves into. Like those other brands, a lot of the brands that we're talking about that have failed were in malls or in strip malls. A lot of these new brands are finding interesting spaces in urban areas, or finding, you know, or finding standalone spaces out in rural areas. And, you know, I think the way that people shop, the way that people are finding clothes is just changing. So yeah, no retail apocalypse, just change.
That's what's interesting is somebody was talking about at B2B Online that there's not a retail apocalypse. What's actually happening is it's like a supply chain apocalypse, a supply chain apocalypse or something. Like there, the actual things that make that actually get products into big stores or stores that have you know, retail footprints are like they're lengthy, time consuming, expensive propositions that, you know, create a lot of pressure on a company that has to hold a very large like capital positions and in inventory. Like there's all these things that are sort of knock on effects that cause you know, retail apocalypse, but in actuality it's that there's cheaper and more efficient ways of doing business in 2018, and customers have found that that they can get all the things that they want without the expensive parts of what drives retail. I'm not saying it very well, but it was an astute observation by someone else that I'm going to have to dig up and find, you know, say it in a much better way. But I think
definitely follow up on that. I mean, this is not something that this is something we've talked about probably ad nauseum at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like we ever really thought there was a retail apocalypse before, but I think what you're talking about right now, you know, is a new angle on this that, you know, I haven't really heard too many people talk about it that way. You know, and I think there's still a lot of color to add to this discussion. We should probably start calling it something else and stop referring to the retail apocalypse, because I think everyone knows that that's just not true anymore. Like I don't know of any retailers except for the ones that maybe are going out of business that are like, yeah, there's a retail apocalypse.
Well,
like,
net, a lot of people, I mean, retail is booming. It's not that retail is dying, right? Yeah. It's that the places where people shop have changed markedly in the last 5 years. Where people get their stuff has changed, and that's created, you know, an imbalance. So you have, you know, there's very large shopping malls that are, you know, derelict, and you have, you know, some tentpole stores that are going under and giving way to all manner of, you know, of other real estate ventures. Like, you know, my local mall no longer has a Dillard's in it. Down here, there used to be a Dillard's men department store and a Dillard's proper. Those are both gone now. And the one, you know, store is a church, which has taken over that part of the mall. And the other side of it is like,
wait, there's a church in your mall.
There's a church in the mall now. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and actually, you know what, who was that? I think it was Sucharita Kadali who was talking about, nonprofit and, nonprofit religious organizations that are buying up brownfield properties, and how that creates really interesting property tax dynamics for local governments. That was an interesting conversation. I think I have to dig that one up too. I think it was Sucharita who mentioned that. Anyway, very interesting stuff happening there. And like, you know, malls are not these... Yeah, depending on the mall, but you know, malls are sort of like very hit and miss with the real estate nowadays. You know, some very strange stores tend to open up. The Halloween store, you know, takes over. It's like, it's just crazy things that are happening in that space. Nobody needs to rehash it, but anyway.
Yeah, have you ever been in a dead mall before?
Oh yeah,
walked around.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There was there's like
it's creepy, man.
Yeah, it's really super creepy. They did a tour of one in like I want to say. Where was I? It's like Pewaukee, Wisconsin. And this is 10 years ago now, but it was like a mall that died in the late 80s and they gave tours of it. It was really interesting. Anyway, gosh, I don't know. I feel like I'm losing steam. What else do we have to talk about today?
Man, I think we need to wrap. That was a good episode.
Yeah, that feels really good. Well, thanks for listening. We want to hear your take on this stuff. Anything from wearables to Google I/O's new emojis to to the sharing economy, model diversity. What do you think? Were you at B2B Online? We want to hear your voice. You can give your voice to this conversation over at futurecommerce.fm. And please, while you're there, subscribe to FC Insiders. It's your way of stay in touch with everything that's going on in the future commerce world. Find out where we're going to be and what's coming up. Get the inside track on new guests, exclusive content. We've got some new stuff coming from Danny Sepulveda and a bunch of other contributors as we get into the summer. And also, while you're there, leave us a 5-star over on Apple Podcasts. And we are available anywhere where you listen to podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify now as well, or from any smart speaker device with the phrase Alexa Play Future Commerce Podcast, or, you know, whatever your smart speaker's name might be. Okay. Whew. Thank you, Brian. You're awesome.
Great. Yeah. With that, man, future commerce is moving fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, retail tech is moving fast. Future commerce
moving fast. We're going to have to find a new one to
close. I know, man. We really do.
Screw it up every time. All right. Thanks for listening.
All right. Bye.